There's an issue that's been on my mind, and I think that it is grossly underestimated, and that is coming up in society. And I think some of you, and I accept it, will say, I don't know why this is bugging the rabbi. I really don't. I don't think this is a big deal at all. But people said that in my animal sermon 8 years ago, and now a lot of people are, and even McDonald's and Chipotle and everyone else is advertising different kinds of food. So we'll see if my inkling is one that is borne out. I hope it's not, because it's a concern of mine I'm going to share with you right now. One of my families, one of our families in this community, she had a play date or whatever you call it. She's going to go to a movie with a friend, a very close friend, and their family. And when she came back from the movie, she told her mother that it was that movie about the boy who goes into a coma and goes to heaven and meets Jesus and comes home. Right? I don't know if you're all aware how much Christian culture has changed in this country. It has shifted from the churches and the televangelists to printing presses and books and a lot of movies. I won't mention who they are, but I don't think you may not know them. But one of my friends who's an evangelical Christian no longer ever gives me articles to read. Rarely even gives me books. Gives me movies. Right? Whole industry of the movies coming out of the religious industry, and I'm not talking about the Noah one with Russell Crowe made by Daniel Aronofsky, who's Jewish and knowledgeable, but I'm talking about this industry of these feel-good, spiritual, happy ending. It's really just a wonderful life, but we put in the New Testament content too, so everyone can relate to it. It's a new way that culture has changed. Fortunately, this young woman, I don't know how she did it. I don't know how I would have done it at 11 years old or 12 years old. Told her friend, you know, they were like, so what do you think of the movie? What do you think of the movie, right? I mean, come on, you know, die, my daughter. The book sold millions of copies, by the way. And I intentionally don't remember the name. And she said, I'm not comfortable with that. And I don't really want to talk about it. And then she went home. Thank God that not only is she an extraordinary girl, because again, I don't know what I would have done at 11 years old, but thank God that, I mean, she's got a family devoted to this congregation, that she herself and her family are devoted to Jewish learning and devoted to a Jewish community, right? I mean, 9 out of 10 girls who are 11 who are Jewish don't go to a synagogue, even go to a Hebrew school. What do you think they think when they're in that situation? And that when we have a father who is here on second day Rosh Hashanah, maybe it helps explain why his daughter is able to talk that way and be strong. I noticed this year, and I shared it on a Shabbos, that there was a law I never really noticed in the Torah before. It's in Deuteronomy. It came up about 5 weeks ago in the Parshiot. And it says that if you have a family member or a best friend, and they try to convince you of the veracity of another religion, you got to cut off ties with them. So harsh. That sounds like, really, you have your best friend, they're just trying to show you a movie or whatever it is, and the Torah is like, they're not your friend. They are not your friend. And then like, oh, it's too harsh, right? That little girl, that family, they're her friends. They're just being ecumenical. You know what I mean? They're just sharing what they love. And this is what I'm alarmed about, which is, I think the Torah has wisdom about the fact that, are they really your friend? If they're trying to make a statement about your identity and who you should be. One of my best teenagers, we've had so many, so I say that about a lot of them, but one of our most devoted families, so I'm using the extreme example, devoted families, texted me from college that she had gone to a wedding, this was this year, and she said, you'll be very happy, Rabbi, it was a Jewish wedding. I was like, oh, that's great. She said, now they say that they use the word messianic before, but they're Jews. So I texted her back and I said, don't be fooled. They are not Jews. She's like, no, they had a rabbi and they had a chuppah and they did the blessings. And I said, they are not your friend. if they're saying we're Jews. She didn't text back. I texted her one or two times, asked her what she thought. She didn't text back. I waited until I saw her in person when she came home from college, and unfortunately, my fears were realized. She thought I was in the wrong. Right? The person that, you know, trained her for a bat mitzvah and has kept in touch with her, a real Jewish leader. She thinks I'm in the wrong for thinking that. I said, yeah, one thing she said is, well, you know, I said that thing about, like, a little bit about what you said to them, and they said, oh, no, like, look, other people call us Jews, right? We can't help what people call us, which was actually a total lie, right? Messianic Jews is the new name for Jews for Jesus, or even beyond that. It's just a whole, it is a rapidly growing branch of Christianity within Christian culture. It's not surprising, really. And by the way, I mean, they intentionally call themselves Jews. So that is a self-name. That is not like, well, that's what people call me. Before I pursue that a little bit, let's remind ourselves of three things. Actually, I'll call it three and a half. I'm not sure what to make of the fourth one. Three things that happened this year. First of all, and you'll probably remember this, but I think these are all interrelated, and I hope you find them too. The head of the NAACP in Spokane had to step down, right? Rachel Dolezal. And it made the news, and it's very interesting. Why did Rachel Dolezal have to step down? Because she'd been claiming that she was black. And she wasn't. She grew up, I forget where it was. It was like Utah, or it was like one of those Midwest states. White heartland, two very, very nice, wholesome white parents. And, you know, she put her hair in dreadlocks, and she had risen to heights in the NAACP. And when someone revealed that what her parents had been saying for ages, which is that really we're proud of her, but she's not black, she had to step down, and she didn't want to. She went on the Today Show, and she said, look, and this is where it comes, identity. We get to choose our own identity, right? Now, think about that. Now, I'm going to go to the how, and then I'll give you the two more examples. What's the how? What's going on in the news all the time? It's I hope I don't have you don't walk out on me on this one. It's Bruce Jenner, right, who's now Caitlyn Jenner. There's a big thing going on in our culture, which is he's now a woman. Because you can choose to be a woman. Now, I don't want anyone to get uncomfortable, okay? I'm not against that. I think gender is a very interesting case, and I'm not entirely sure how to think about it, but I think it goes something like this, and I will quote someone else. Psychologists are having, I read a very interesting article, and I think it was in the Post, the Washington Post, not the New York Post, don't read it. Unless you're talking about alien babies, get the New York Post. That psychologists are having difficulty with the issue of whether someone who puts on women's clothes is a long-standing phenomenon, right? Transvestite, what do you want? I hate the words. I just say someone who enjoys wearing women's clothes. That's different from someone who puts on women's clothes and says, I am now a woman, and I want to be treated as a woman. So those are two different things. And they're having a little bit of difficulty understanding in this identity discussion where people are falling because some of those lines are getting blurred. I think that gender is a little bit different because I don't think that Kate Jenner is stealing my identity if she says she's a woman. If you're a woman and you disagree, you can tell me over honey cake. I think that in some ways that what the psychologist is saying is like, look, if it goes beyond that you want to wear those clothes, if it goes that it's something about what you really, really, really feel, then no one can have it. I don't think you've offended, you've stolen the identity of the other gender by claiming it. I know some people think, oh, they're going to use my bathroom, and that's deeply offensive. I think all bathrooms should be unisex anyway. Gina now thinks so, Tina didn't, so things are a little different in the admin building. I'm okay with that. I always thought it was absurd at college, we all have different bathrooms, but whatever. So, you're not stealing anyone's identity, I don't think, by saying that I'm claiming this other gender identity and I'm going to change myself. I actually think that's okay, and I respect it. But I think what Rachel Dolezal did was not okay. I think then we have Black Lives Matter. think it's a great program. Black Lives Matter is the movement to be extremely aware of the racial bias against African Americans by the police in this country. I think it's deeply true. I'm one of those people who believes that who believes the fact that this government was involved in bringing crack originally into the Los Angeles community under President Ronald Reagan in order to generate funds to combat the Soviet imperialism in Latin America. I think there is a lot to be said for the way African Americans have been persecuted and not been given proper justice. And one of the leaders, if not the main leader of the Black Rights Matter movement, is Sean King. He was an Oprah Winfrey scholar, went to an African-American university. According to his birth certificate, he has two white parents. Now, he claims that his mother put another man on the birth certificate in order, for whatever reason, and it could be true. You and I both don't know, right? And I'm not trying to villainize the young man, but it raised another issue that they had of, like, the post-Ferguson Black Lives Matter movement. You know, has an Oprah Winfrey scholarship at Black University. The fact that he might say, he hasn't yet, he might be in the right that he has a black father that is different than the legal record, but I could see him doing what Rachel Dolezal did when she went on Good Morning America and saying, I get to claim that. I feel black. Right? And so that I get to claim that identity, whether you like it or not, and what's the problem with you people? That you think that that's wrong. I identify with an oppressed community who has been persecuted. If I choose to do that and I feel that, who are you to tell me what my identity is? You might know that recently, third example, I've done 2.5, is, I hear the rain coming down. Third example is the anthology comes out every year, I used to buy it, of the best American poetry came out. And there was a poem in there by Yifan Zhao, a woman, Chinese American poet. There's a footnote in the book that the poem was accepted by Yifan Zhao, Chinese American woman poet, until Michael Derek Hudson admitted that he was the poet. And he wanted to make a point that he couldn't get published as Michael Derek Hudson, medium, white, Caucasian, WASPy male, and so that he had been published for a couple of years now as Yifan Zhao. Because then he got published. And his point was, okay, I'm not assuming that identity exactly, but it's not fair that anyone should get to claim an identity over someone else, and so I'm going to claim this one. And actually, at first I thought, this is really clever, he's really playing an interesting game, until it was determined this past week that he actually had a classmate in high school named Yifan Zhao, Chinese American woman, so that if people ever looked up, they'd see, oh yeah, Yifan Zhao, they lived in that town, went to that high school, same age as him. She's not happy. Even though she got published. I don't know why. It's not even. Okay. Rabbi Shabbatai introduced today's Torah reading. Right? Be'at Ketav, the binding of Isaac. If you open up, I'm going to make it a little bit more uncomfortable, and then I'll make it much more comfortable. Okay? If you open up to the beginning of the Christian New Testament, the first thing that you'll see is, and God said, my son, my only son, whom I lovest, Jesus. Now they take that from what we read, which is God said, my son, my only son, whom I lovest, Isaac, for the Akedah. It's not accidental that the editor of the Christian New Testament put that in there to start the New Testament, because in the first couple of centuries of the first millennium, there was a clear attempt to say what is yours is now ours, and what you claim now belongs to us. In fact, they were claiming that Isaac was not the chosen son, and that if he had been, he failed because he didn't get killed. And they viewed him. You just read Paul's letters and the theology of the Nicene Creed in the early church. Judaism was a failure because Isaac was not slaughtered, and God realized, you guys aren't ready for this special covenant. and waits until Jesus comes along and Jesus gets the same name, and then Jesus is the true son, even better son, because it's God's son, and Jesus gets slaughtered, and the lamb had nothing to do with the fact that we were shepherds of lambs. It was the fact that the lamb is the atonement sacrifice on Yom Kippur, and therefore they're the only ones who have effected atonement, and they get God's special covenant. It was actually, it had a lot to do with Jewish persecution for a couple of thousand years that we claimed a covenant we shouldn't have, but they had the new covenant. But the strange thing is that I almost long for the days when it was that we were so different, no Christian would want to claim to be Jewish, but then something else happened. I think the most significant development in many ways in religion in the last 50 years has been that it used to be that if you wanted to know what the Talmud said, or you wanted to know what Judaism really thought about a topic, you had to ask your rabbi, or you had to be able to read Aramaic. And if you were a Christian and you wanted to know who the real Jesus was, what was he really like, and I heard something about him being Jewish, then you have to go to your Christian evangelical preacher or the Catholic minister to find out. And now, there are thousands of books, and you can download them to your Kindle for 99 cents. So on the one hand, you've got the movie industry going on in the Christian culture, and on the other hand, you have this thing, which is no one ever has to join a synagogue, because if you have a question, you pick up a book, you have no idea who wrote it. You have no idea what their perspective is. And one of the things that Christians have been reading is from people like my professors that I studied with, which is, as part of our interfaith dialogue, you should understand how Jewish Jesus was. He was a Jewish guy. He was probably what we call a Hasidian. He was a, not like the Hasidim today, but he was a Hasidian. They're mentioned in the Book of Maccabees. They lived in the Galilee. They were largely farmers and workmen like carpenters. And they despised the corruption in Jerusalem among the priests. They felt that they were representing the prophets. They loved reading Isaiah, Jeremiah, the anonymous prophet, Amos. They loved those guys. And they felt that the priesthood, which focused on Leviticus and Jerusalem, were getting corrupt under the Romans. And Jesus was a guy from the Galilee who was part of them. And he was a very interesting teacher and had very many interesting things to say. Many of them very wise, and I'm happy to teach them in the synagogue. I mean, on Sundays and things like that. And then those books spread. And then people were like, now the pastor can say, well, he was a little bit Jewish, but not so much. Now people are like, he was a Jewish guy. Truth is, if you ever just watch any PBS thing, Christianity changed radically after the death of Jesus. As I've always said, sometimes the best source on this is Monty Python's The Life of Brian. They were surprisingly close to the truth. But basically what happens is, Jesus was nothing like thinking of himself as the Son of God. And he was nothing like, historically, thinking he was starting a new religion. He was a Jewish guy who opposed what the... he thought the Sadducees and the temple were corrupt, so did we. And he opposed the Romans and their imperialism, and he was concerned about the future of society, and he was put down as a rebel by the Romans and killed. And it was probably more like 50 to 100 years after he died that a new religion started up that became the Catholic Church, largely after the Emperor Constantine converted to this and spread. And they're the ones who started something very, very different. So what I'm saying is this. That now that we have a sense of who the historical Jesus was, not the one that had been explained as historical by the traditions of the church, people start thinking, Christians, that I want to be more Jewish, and I relate to this. And people like me who were like teaching this stuff, and whose professors wrote these books and thought we were doing great ecumenical dialogue, and we were bringing people together, it's now bouncing back the other way. Because now we have people, I knew some at the University of Judaism, they weren't studying to be rabbis, but they were undergraduates there, that we became close enough that they admitted to me, I'm not really Jewish, I'm a Messianic Jew. But I mean, I'm really Jewish because I'm a Messianic Jew, but you might not think I'm Jewish. But like Rachel Dolezal saying, I'm African American, you may have this issue about it, I don't know what your deal is, but I'm Jewish. We've had people come up in here on Saturday mornings, come to the honors, wear their tuxedo, and then I look at them and I'm like, you don't look right, I'm just saying, are you really Jewish? And they're like, and they say to me, yes, but I don't think you would think so. And I say, are you Messianic? And they're like, yes, people call us that. And I'm like, yeah, I'm calling you that to go take a seat, right? So we have this group of people who are claiming our identity. And our young people often will think they are bonding with us. They are showing kinship with us, and they talk a great game because people like Rob the Dog put out there about the historical Jesus, thinking we could have a conversation about what he was really saying in his time, not with the Christian overlay, the fact that they now, by taking on talit and Hebrew names, that they can now be at one with us. I did a funeral this past year about 5 months ago, and it was not for a member, it was covered for another rabbi. And it was a very small funeral. We had like 8 people gathered around, and the oldest daughter said, "I have a special gift for you." She handed it to me, and I was like, "Okay, I'd be happier with the check," but I could see it was a book. I would have, for the rabbi's fund. I got home. I would have liked, I could have lived with the Book of Mormon. You know what I mean? I was hoping that it wasn't. It's a book that was about the fact that, and couldn't tell exactly who it looked like a very real publishing press. And it was about a rabbi in Israel. You may not have heard of him, but he is widely considered one of the most important Orthodox rabbis of his generation in Israel, according to the front cover and the first page and the second page and every other page. And before he died, he left a note to be opened by his death with the name of the Messiah on it. And it was, they opened it, Yehoshua. Jesus is the Hebrew name. Therefore, we know that the Jews also are coming to understand that Jesus was the true Messiah. I Googled this guy. I don't even know if the story is true. Certainly wasn't one of the most important rabbis that Israel has ever been. But you would never know from the book. And these are the books that are out there. So here we are. When 90% of Jews don't affiliate with the synagogue, or even recognize that the only Judaism that happens in this world, outside the land of Israel, happens in sanctuaries like this, in Hebrew schools like this. And they're sending their children off into a world where their best friends are saying, "We're Jewish too. And you should love that, because I'm going to come to Hillel with you. Or you can be part, we'll call our thing Hillel too. We didn't call it that, other people call it that." However that happened. And my rabbi is Rabbi Jesus. Because you know he was a rabbi. I've got 100 books I could give you to show and prove that it's true. He wasn't, by the way. But if he wasn't, I mean, it'd be fine with me. And that they go to a place where the rabbi leads the service. And they wear tefillin, and they put on tefillin, and they wear kippot. I think that we have to listen to the words of Deuteronomy when it says, these people are not your friends. I don't go onto a reservation of a Native American whose people, their land was taken, and their people genocided, and tell them, you know what? I feel so Native American. Let's do a sweat lodge together. You know, I listened to some R. Carlos Nakai flute from the New Age store, and I realized I've got a Native American soul. That's disgusting, right? And yet, that is what is considered okay out there. It's a danger to our young people. It's a danger to us. I fully embrace ecumenical dialogue. And I want us to be closer, but there is a danger lurking, and it is growing. And it is best that we be vigilant, and that we train our kids to understand where it's coming from and how to react to books whose publishers look real and statements that look fine. Who go off to college, when Campus Crusade comes by and they're all weird, and they're all like, "Oh, we're all happy because we love Jesus." That's easy to say, go to the next Mormon door. But when someone comes by with an ace tie and says, "We read the Torah, can I read the Torah with you?" and they're wearing a kippah, that's where we have to train our kids to say, "You are not my friend."